What are we starting with this week?
A Spotify. No, we did that.
A Wii review.
A Wii review. You're gosh darn right.
How do you always know?
I don't always know. Sometimes I don't know.
Sometimes I think he waits for you to get it wrong and then he says the right one.
Yeah, well, then the chances are high for him, aren't they? So,
this is a review on Apple Podcasts. If you would like to leave a review, please go to Apple Podcasts and leave a review on Apple Podcasts, sending us the review.
On Apple Podcasts.
On Apple Podcasts is
Apple
the way to do it.
Apple. Don't. That's Apple Podcasts.
Please do not email us your review.
Don't DM us no, the review. Yeah. Just Apple Podcasts.
So many subject lines saying 5-star review.
We're not asking for your feedback. We're asking for your promotion. You can feedback in the comments on YouTube. Please do not email us your review.
We're going to be honest. If you want to give us feedback, please do it in a way that boosts us in the algorithm. just gonna come out and say it. So this is a 5-star review from Help Me, I'm Drowning.
Is that Arthur Braxton on the phone? Very niche reference, I apologize.
A bunch of silly guys being silly whilst delving into and sharing information about a particular scientific topic. They provide a welcome break from the stress of A-levels whilst also keeping me educated. 'Tis a great podcast. Smiley face.
That's fantastic.
It's very lovely.
Thank you very much. Jamp, if you go back in the footage there, You'll see me choking on my water halfway through Corey's reading.
Help me, I'm drowning.
Much like Arthur Braxton did.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. It's all come full circle.
There we go.
So before we get into the show, I would like to ask a question for everyone that is watching on YouTube. Get into the comments and answer this question. Would you donate your organs after you die? And if so, why? And if not, Why not?
I'm not going to bloody use them.
Because the government makes me unless I tell them not to. That's why.
Yeah, it's opt out now, I think. Cool. Yeah. So, yeah, that was the question. Get down to the YouTube comments and answer it. And if you're not watching on YouTube, go to YouTube anyway. Answer the comment. Get be part of the conversation.
We're really pushing these guys around. Go to Apple Podcasts. Now go to YouTube. Now go.
Please go everywhere.
As though it's not 3 swipes away, Luke, okay? I'm sure their fingers will last. Shall we start the show?
Let's start the show.
Hello and welcome to The Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Jamp and Luke Cutforth.
Hello.
And Special guest, the fourth Sci Guy,
again.
Noah Finns.
Yeah! Hey!
I just want to say well done to Noah Finns for staying absolutely silent up until this point.
That's so painful. You just keep talking.
Now you know what it's like to be around you.
Yeah. Well, I don't have to be around me.
Today, we're putting the you to us in uterus.
You too?
As in the band U2? Yeah.
No.
We're putting them in the uterus?
They were in a uterus. At some point.
Get back in the womb.
We're putting... Well, I had 2 options here.
Yeah.
I had, we're putting the us in uterus,
uh-huh,
or the you to us in uterus, which I think is far better.
Can well, that's you a nice what insight into your today? Writing process. The uterus. Are we doing something about uteruses?
Yes. Donating the uterus.
Yeah!
That's it.
What are we doing, Noah?
Donating all our uteruses to a good cause.
The uterus transplants. We're doing uterus transplants today. So if everyone will look to their right and left, you'll see a doctor coming into the room ready to take your uterus.
Oh, my God. Hello, hello, doctor.
No, so we're... There's
a disappointing lack of uteruses in this room, I'm afraid, doctor.
Well... We got one.
Jam?
But whose?
We have to share.
You'll have to cut us all over to find out, Doctor.
We're like those. We're like the
Russian roulette of uterus transplants.
We're like the three fates from Greek mythology. They've got one eye between them,
exactly.
Right? You know, but we've got one uterus between the four of us. We have to share it.
I could have one.
That's
not
less
checked.
Than the average.
That is true. I haven't checked.
Yeah,
I've not gone. I've not gone. Well, I don't have much of an opening to go in there. You know, but maybe one day.
They can do scans. They don't have to look up your willy.
I did have an ultrasound though. I've had a couple.
And they find a uterus?
Well, the most recent one was on my testicles. So that's not true. The most recent one was on my bladder, but before that it was on my testicles, and before that it was on my abdomen.
So what I'm hearing is they haven't looked.
No, well, I would have hoped they would have told me if they found a uterus.
But they haven't specifically looked.
Maybe they'd be too awkward. Maybe too shy.
Mm.
You know, be like,
oh, I didn't know.
It's like if someone's got food in their teeth. Someone's got a uterus when you're not expecting it. You know, you don't want to mention it in case you offend them.
The polite thing to do is to tell them. Got a little bit of a uterus there.
A little bit of a if you just a quick hiss, right?
Oh, it's gone. You got it. It's
just wake up after anesthetic, like from anesthetic. Doctor's like, look, I've got it. Got it for you. Right, there you
it's
go.
It's fine.
So,
pesky little thing.
So embarrassing when that happens.
So we're talking about uterus transplants today. And the reason we're talking about uterus transplants today was on a whim. I was watching a video the other day and they brought up uterus transplants for trans people, trans women specifically. And I thought, that sounds interesting. Let's look into it. So I went to the Wikipedia for it. And it turns out there's quite a few of them that have been done. So I thought, why not? Why not do that today?
As in ones that worked?
Well, we'll see, won't we?
That's a no then, isn't it?
That's not a no. We'll see.
Seems like a no.
I feel like he would say yes.
Well, no,
yeah,
I
you'd
to...
say yes if it was a yes.
Well, I wouldn't spoil it, regardless of what the answer was.
There's an air of
it's
suspense.
A no.
I turned. You should know this. We had a conversation about this, like, not even 2 days ago.
No, you. No.
I turned to you and I said, I think that they will have uterus transplants for trans women being a fairly easy enough procedure within the next century. Easily.
But that's not what the conversation we just talked about was. The conversation was, did it work?
Well, you should know. You'll find out.
Well, I don't know.
You're delaying finding out, please.
Are they taking them from trans men and putting them in trans women?
No.
That'd be very effective.
We'll get
T4T plants.
Two birds with one uterus.
You for you.
Give it back. Mum said it's my turn.
So before we get into uterus transplants, I think it'd be pertinent to give you all a quick history of transplants.
Go on then.
Mm-hmm.
What's the first transplant?
Transgender
kidneys?
Plants.
Wait, all plants are trans.
Not all plants are trans. Some plants are hermaphroditic.
That's true.
They're unisex. Damn. Unisex. Well, intersex.
How progressive of
they're
them.
They're into sex.
I mean, some of them are, yes.
With themselves. Would it be the equivalent of a wank?
No.
Like a plant having asexual reproduction?
Well, I mean... No.
When you wank, you don't asexually reproduce.
No.
You don't know what I do in my bedroom.
So a plant... This is the... A plant... I mean, I guess if you call what plants do sexual reproduction, a plant fertilizing itself isn't really, it's not quite asexual reproduction. It's still using a sexual process. It's just
I wasn't looking for an answer.
Specifically be the coming together of two separate organisms.
That's true. Yeah.
It depends what your definition like of sex is. I feel like it's a gray area.
Because it's not quite that sort of asexual, it's sort of parthenogenic. Although I suppose fertilizing yourself, is it asexual? It's asexual by sexual means. But then I suppose parthenogenesis using an egg that's unfertilized. But the fertilization, I think. I'm sorry, I'm rambling here. We'll talk about this at some other day. Maybe Sci Guys After Dark, our new podcast.
Well, you have a conversation with yourself.
I told you that I do this.
You told me. And now I have seen it.
So we've got a new podcast, Sci Guys After Dark. It's a great podcast. Definitely check it out.
We should talk about it more.
Yeah, it's exclusive to Patreon. Yeah. Basically, it's like Sci Guys, but after the conversation ends, after the show ends and Sci Guys, the conversation doesn't, keep the camera rolling and we talk about anything.
Conversation
that we want.
Ends, we just sit in silence.
We sit in silence.
It's really boring.
It's really intense eye contact.
No, it's not strictly science based. So check out Sci Guys After Dark over on our Patreon, where it's the only place you can get it. Back to the show. Yeah.
That's science speak before we chat shit.
Luke, you asked what the first transplant was. You said it was a kidney.
Kidneys. I asked if it was kidneys. I didn't assert that it was kidneys.
Did he not assert that it was kidneys?
It was kidneys.
Wow. So assertive.
Is it not maybe weight?
I thought it would be like skin or something.
Yeah, I was going to say, transplant. Could it be a limb?
Yeah.
Does that count as a transplant?
Oh, a limb's quite hefty.
Yeah, and limb does kind of.
Oh, yeah, but is it easier to like chop off someone's leg and stitch it on someone else, or then
it's easier to chop it off, but it's harder to then stitch it back on and get it working.
Lots of like tendons, veins and tendons and stuff.
Nerve endings, and whatnot.
It was a kidney.
Maybe it was a toe or something.
A toe,
a little toe.
I'm gonna go with skin.
It was a kidney.
Do you know it's a kidney, and that's why you keep saying that?
It was a kidney.
It was a kidney, wasn't it?
It was skin.
So let's start in 1616.
With the kidney transplant.
No, with blood transfusions.
It's the skin transplant of 1616. Ah, blood.
Classic.
We've got four little things about blood, okay. And then we can get onto the transplants, okay?
Yeah.
Blood's in the skin.
Wow.
Blood is everywhere.
Yeah.
And blood is in the blood vessels.
Blood is everywhere. Oh, God.
Guys, we've got a lot to get to.
Transplant gone wrong.
We've not got much time. So in 1616, Dr. William Harvey sort of said blood circulates around the body, with blood being pumped around the brain and the body by the heart, right? So basically it was like, circulation, it's a thing. That's how blood works. That's what your heart does. That was in 1616, okay? Mm-hmm. So that was laid down, established. We're like, good. Blood circulates, yes?
Very good.
Sorry, it's just like a slogan. It's like, blood it's a thing. It's like, I'd buy it. I would.
I'll say this to you. You don't need to buy it. You've got plenty.
But what if I want more?
Then you take some out and then you make more.
Yeah.
You telling me to do EPO, which is against the Olympic Committee rules?
Oh, gosh. Well, what's that's going to really mess
blood,
you up.
Blood doping.
That's blood taking doping. Someone else's blood and putting it in you, though.
Yeah,
no, it's taking your own blood as well.
Is it?
You do it yourself. You take it out.
Recycling.
You take it out and then put it back in.
What? What's that do?
I shouldn't have said anything.
Is it to reduce your weight?
It probably gives you more oxygenation. It probably gives you more red blood cells, which can increase how oxygenated your blood can become.
Oh, because you take them out and then your body replaces them and then you put the other ones back in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Genius. What, but then clever. Don't you pop?
You're not like a balloon.
You pop every time you have a cup of water.
Yes.
Well, this does. That's why you've never seen him drink a full cup of water.
Severe bloating.
I have to sip them.
Have you seen Charlie and the Chocolate Factory?
Gustus Gloop.
No.
The Violet Beauregard.
Violet Beauregard. That was based on Luke after he had a
single glass
smoothie.
Of water.
So 1665 was the first successful blood transfusion.
When you say successful.
Successful, were there unsuccessful
what happened
ones?
To the other
I imagine
ones?
They were unsuccessful.
Well, the first one was between two dogs, so I'll let you figure out what the unsuccessful ones.
A couple of dead dogs.
Probably more than a couple of dead dogs,
oh,
mate.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, you could get through a lot of dogs trying to figure out blood transfusions.
Is this because they weren't matching the blood types correctly?
I'm not sure exactly
they
why.
They must be.
We could.
Did they know about blood types?
No, they didn't actually.
Oh shit!
No, they didn't know about blood types at this point. It's a dog. It's dog blood. You put dog blood in the dog. It's good. It's blood.
A
is blood.
A dog's a dog.
A dog's a dog. Blood's blood. Forget about it. In 1818, we're jumping 2 centuries. I'm sorry.
Jesus, I was going to say I'm dog in here, but that doesn't sound. No.
When you jump 2 centuries, how many dead dogs is that jumping? And
millions.
Dead people.
Billions.
Billions of dead people, all from blood transfusions.
No, what? No, I just in
or
general.
In the pursuit of science.
In 200 years, probably
just
a lot of people die.
Just in general.
Yeah.
I think at least 1 billion people would die in 2 centuries.
Yeah, maybe. Depends what century.
We're on the third bullet point.
Oh, dear.
In 1818, a Dr. James Blundell invents something for transfusing blood and carries out a successful transfusion on a dying patient. And then he basically comes out and says, only human blood can be transfused into a human patient.
Genius.
No dog blood for those people. No, no, no.
Pig
no.
blood?
No.
Pig blood, no. Don't give them pig blood. You know? Unless you want to eat it. Yum, yum, yum. Then organ transplant. So in 1902, they joined blood vessels. A French scientist joins blood vessels, which shows that organ transplants can be feasible, because that's obviously a key part of an organ transplant, being able to join blood vessels to other blood vessels. Okay, we've got there. 1905, the first reported cornea transplant.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
The eye.
And that takes place, that was in somewhere called Moravia. Dr. Edward Zerm performed the operation on a laborer who was blinded in an accident. And he basically was able to see again and then regained his sight for the rest of his life.
Wow.
And then in 1954, Luke?
It was a kidney.
Yes, the first successful kidney transplant was done in Boston, Massachusetts. And nowadays, more than 3,000 kidney transplants are carried out
every second
in the UK.
Sorry. Every second.
3,000 kidneys every second.
Can I ask?
It's like one born every minute. Yeah. 3,000 kidneys. They're just shoving kidneys into newborn babies.
Oh,
do you know how they rejoin blood vessels? I'm really interested in that. Whether it's something so delicate, like a blood vessel or a nerve. Do you know how that... Because I know nerves kind of find each other often.
Yeah, I think nerves can find each other. I think you can just... Honestly, I'm not super certain on this, because I didn't look too deeply into this, because you'll find out later. This is just kind of the overview. There's a sort of main story behind this that's coming up. I'm not super sure. I feel like it's just a case of grafting and it will heal itself. That's what it seems to be for.
Just got to graft. Just got to work really hard. Just got to graft.
Like skin.
Put the work in and it'll heal itself.
Yeah.
Guys, I respect that. I respect the graft, man. I'll join together.
Respect the graft.
Just manifest it.
Surgeons are real grafters, man, honestly, aren't they?
Very good.
So just send it for the skin.
You got skin in the game.
The skin in the game. Oh, that was so much better.
So, yeah, I think it's a case of sort of grafting and then they'll grow in. Obviously, if it's really, really sort of tiny blood vessels, you go for the larger ones, obviously. You know, you're not going to be trying to slit capillaries and putting them back together, you know? And also, I think blood vessels can generally, they will grow out. There's this sort of, you know, angiogenesis. It's the growth of new blood vessels. So they will sort of grow kind of to where they're needed for new.
So clever.
No? You were giving me a very blank stare.
I'm just amazed at the human and other bodies.
Yeah, so I mean, that's
very cool.
Interestingly, angiogenesis comes up in tumors, wherein they give themselves a real good blood supply. Well, they do. So they grow blood vessels,
like,
and they
the
start
Russian pipelines.
Yeah, just like that.
I'll tell you this, Luke. Yeah. I don't know enough about the Russian pipelines. I'm just going to assume that you're right.
We've got lots of pipelines to Europe because Europe's really dependent on Russian gas, I think, and also maybe oil. Hmm. Yeah.
Good to know. Thank you.
It is just like that.
It's just like that.
Just like that. Just
oil is the blood of our economy.
Is the tumor Europe or Russia?
Ooh, wow, that depends.
That's
on
a loaded question.
I can't. I have been raised inside of the Western world. I cannot have an objective answer.
Let's just make an entirely neutral statement and say that America is the tumor.
Oh,
okay. That is entirely
piss off absolutely nobody.
Yeah, I mean, okay. A number of countries in the world that would be pissed off by that. One, America. Number of countries that would agree with that. However many else there are, because everyone else fucking
all the countries
America.
Minus one.
192. But then if America's the tumor, all of our currencies are based on Americans' currency. So we're all living off a tumor.
It's a malignant tumor,
the tumor's spreading.
Right.
And we're eating it for sustenance. Yeah. I don't know, man.
Yum, yum, yum.
Well, if this tumor's going to kill me, I'm going to kill it. So... you know, you've got the kidney transplant in 1954 in Massachusetts, and you can see how long it took for these sort of major steps to happen, but then kind of how quickly it all snowballed. It kind of reminds me of how we only learned to fly. I think in less than 100 years, we figured out how to fly in planes, and then went to the moon.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was when was the first plane invented?
1860s.
Invented or flown. The Wright brothers
flight. I mean, was that like the 1860s?
It's early 1900s, isn't it?
I always feel like it's the early 1900s, yeah. But it's weird that cars and planes came about so close together.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I feel like cars should have been around a lot longer.
We should have conquered cars way before planes.
Yeah, cars should have been like sat there and been
they're literally
widely
just
used.
Boxes on wheels.
1903, we were well 1903, off.
1903, yeah. Wow.
Wow, and then we had planes in World War II, literally, like, what, less
40
than
years.
40 years?
Well, yeah, less than 40. Wow. 30 years later, right?
Yeah.
36 years later, yeah.
That's amazing. Like, imagine...
And then double that again to the moon.
But, you know, then to space yeah. Just not that long after that, yeah. Right?
62 years.
Yeah, in less than a century, we couldn't get off of the ground, right? For an extended period. Yeah, yeah, for an extended period. We couldn't get off the ground for an extended period. And now we have, stuff just flying off into, outer space.
Yeah.
insane. So obviously you see here, first cornea transplant was 1905. Then 1954, we've got kidney transplants, which is, you know, obviously a bit more complex. Although, as far as I'm aware, with kidney transplants, they're much easier. As an organ, they're relatively easy to transplant. I think it's a case of you just plug a kidney in and it... No, I mean, relatively speaking, a kidney is a blood filter, right?
USB-C connection, yeah.
A kidney is a blood filter. You plug it into the blood, it's just going to filter blood. It's what it does.
Unless you get your kidney from Apple, then it's lightning.
Yeah, true.
They're trying to change
that. I do not want to live to see the day that you get an Apple-branded kidney that only works with certain blood types if you pay an Apple
it's
subscription.
Wireless. It's got the MagSafe. You just have to magnetically attach it.
Wow. Yeah. Thanks, Apple.
It's really good.
Innovation.
Yeah, and then a year later they bring out, you know, the Apple Kidney Plus, which fixes all the problems of the previous kidney. So 1954, first successful kidney transplant. 63, 9 years 9 years later, first liver transplant. The patient unfortunately died, but that
first
doctor
successful
liver. The transplant was successful, but then the patient ended up dying afterwards. So there is obviously a period of, as long as the patient doesn't die immediately, as long as the thing isn't rejected immediately, you can say that it is successful.
Did they die of causes related to the liver?
Yeah, probably. but that's because you need a lot of drugs in order to not reject these organs.
And there were no dealers about.
Imagine a family member needs a liver transplant or they're going to die. And the
I
doctor comes out
and
they're
I
like,
bad news.
It was successful.
It was completely
bad
successful.
News.
They still died.
Dr. Starzl went on to develop all the sort of drugs and techniques that you needed to do in order to make the transplant successful. And the first truly successful one, this is from the NHS, the first truly successful liver transplant was done in 1967, only 4 years later.
That 2 years before we went to the moon.
Right? Yeah.
That was after my dad was born.
4 years after Doctor Who came out. This is what's wild to me. We've lived in a world where transplants are common. Right, they're not a organ donor. Being an organ donor was something that I knew about for my entire life. It felt like at least Doctor Who, Britain's pretty much one of Britain's probably longest running TV show. Maybe I think let's say
is it older than
the news
is older than live that is older than liver successful liver transplants. But in that they were and you've got to remember that there are people who overlapped with our lifetime who lived. Yeah. Like a lot of their life, not the majority, but a lot of their life without transplants being heard about, really. If, forget even being common.
My dad would be so dead right now.
Your dad would be so dead.
My dad would be so dead right now.
Your dad would be so dead, bro.
Is it a transplant?
I'm not going to out my dad's medical problems. Oh, okay. But he had his gallbladder removed.
Oh.
And he went septic. Oh. And his whole body blew up and they had to stab him with a big needle to drain it and they had to have 8 people hold him down.
Oh my God.
He would be dead.
Popped him like a balloon. Yeah.
1965, kidney transplant from a dead person for the first time. 1967, first heart transplant performed in South Africa. 68, first heart transplant in Britain, carried out by a team of 18 doctors and nurses at the National Heart Hospital in London. 1968, and by the way, 300 or so heart transplants are carried out in the UK every single year now. Bear in mind, first successful one in the UK, 1968. Nowadays, we've got over 300 a year.
Wow.
Insane, right? In 1968, they set up a laboratory to check the suitability for organ donation. And then 2001, the first complete lung transplant in my lifetime, in all of our lifetimes, actually. The first complete lung transplant was carried out in Spain on a patient, in Sweden. Yeah. And then in 2010, the first, we were all actual people by this point.
Yeah, I was conscious.
The first face transplant carried out in Spain.
I remember that.
What?
I remember that, yeah.
Face off.
But 2001, my mum was in hospital with pneumonia in 2007 and there was somebody across from her in her ward who had a lung transplant.
Wow.
That was only a few years fucking
after the first successful
one. So do you guys know what a uterus is?
Yes.
It's for making babies, isn't it?
Didn't ask what it was for.
That might not be true because not everybody with a uterus wants to make a baby.
Not everyone with a uterus can make babies.
They don't have to use it, but that's what it's there for.
Use it or lose it.
Is it an organ?
Well done, Luke.
Thank you.
Good job. What purpose does this organ serve? And where would you actually? No, forget that one.
It's for cooking babies in the oven.
That's what your hands are for.
Oh.
Trick question.
In your oven.
No, not trick question. Difficult question, Luke. Where would you find a uterus?
I think you'd find it roughly in line with the top of your, what's this bone called?
Hip bone. Pelvis.
Top of my hip bone?
Well, in a person who generally does not have a peenie.
Why are you trying to catch him out?
Why are you trying to catch him out?
you're laying down the eggshells.
In most people who are assigned female at birth, you will find a uterus. Correct?
Yeah, let's go with that.
Thank you very much. Okay.
I
reject your game.
That's fine.
I will cross your bridge, troll.
Don't call me a troll. That's kind of...
Don't be a troll then.
I'm not trolling you at all.
Not my fault you're a troll.
Troll.
You're a very progressive troll, but still a troll.
I'm merely trying to help you be a better person.
Display my wokeness.
So, a uterus. What's another word for uterus?
Womb.
Oh, yeah. Well
done. Good job.
Womb. The wombling. Underground.
So, it is, it's kind of like a pear shape, an upside down pear shaped organ. It's very muscular. Its job is to jump.
It's like a little baby house.
It's not to make babies anymore.
No, you said
it's for cooking babies in the oven.
Yeah, so it's
but no, because it is the oven.
Well, exactly. Yeah, it is the oven.
Yeah, but an oven cooks babies. An oven is
yeah,
for
but
cooking
an oven
things
is
in
for
the oven.
Cooking food in the oven.
Yeah, that's exactly what an oven is for.
An oven is for cooking food.
Have
in
you
oven.
Ever Googled the definition?
So, yeah, a uterus is to, it says here, and this is from, I think, Britannica, mm-hmm. It's to nourish and house a fertilized egg until the fetus or offspring is ready to be delivered. Basically, it's where that little alien grows in you till you pop it out.
A little nice. Parasite?
It's a parasite, yeah. Not an alien.
Oh, they're aliens.
Leeching off your nutrients.
See their little, heads?
They could be birds.
Don't like them. And also, they are alien in that they come from, like part of them comes from outside, you know, you. They're alien to your body.
Yep.
You could say.
Foreign.
Sure.
Yeah.
Migrants.
Is getting an abortion xenophobic?
I will deport.
Should we be paying attention?
I will deport this baby.
Forced deportation. Yeah, so let's go quickly through the structure of a uterus. How big is a uterus generally? Roughly, how big do you think a uterus would be?
Smaller than an abdomen.
Like an avocado.
Yeah.
I think it's smaller than that.
When not housing a baby.
When not housing a baby.
A flaccid womb.
The reason I say that is because I think like we might not realize that it like expands with the baby. We would just think it's the size of a baby all the time.
Would we? I would.
I did not assume that at any point.
I don't know a point at which I've been taught that the uterus gets bigger. I imagine it to be just the thing on the diagram where it's just like,
I was taught it in sex ed.
Yeah. I didn't retain that information.
I just like the idea of people walking around with just massive baby-sized cavities in them.
Yeah.
Just all the time.
Yeah.
It's a big empty space. Very big funny. Cavern.
It's just very cavernous. In you reach up inside and you just can flop
empty
your...
space. You can store things in there.
Like babies.
Yeah, for example.
If you want to.
For example. Or like snacks.
Babies.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
A healthy, nutritious snack.
Yes. How big is it normally then?
So it's usually 6 to 8 centimeters long, or 2.4 to 3.1 inches, and the thickness of the wall is about 2 to 3 centimeters. So I'll show you. I've got a rule right here. Wow.
I just definitely picture it in my head, being like the size of like maybe like 2/3 the width of an unpregnant person.
So maybe about this.
The size of your pinky.
But it's obviously incorrect.
About the size of my pinky. Right. So if you look there, about the size of my pinky would be about the size of sort of the length of a uterus. So the uterus, I said it's 6 to 8 centimeters long, but it varies in length. That we said that it's pear-shaped, like an upside-down pear. 6 centimeters at the widest, usually, about 6 centimeters at the widest. So roughly about the size of my pinky, maybe a little bit shorter than that. Mm. And about 3 centimeters at the sort of narrower end. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, it's not small. You are right, Luke. It's probably about the size of an avocado.
Right. But much smaller than I imagine it to be.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you want to hide an avocado as a lovely little warm snack, if you got a uterus,
perfect pocket right there.
You got a perfect little avocado pocket. You can have guac whenever you want.
Yeah.
You can cook it in there as well in the oven.
You don't cook an avocado, Jamp.
You can cook an avocado.
You could pop a potato in there. A little baked potato.
You can cook anything.
Uterine baked potato. Lovely.
That sounds like something you'd get at a fancy restaurant.
I was going to say they charge £30 for that somewhere.
Yeah. Uterine baked potato.
Comes with a lovely lining sauce, you know, like a meaty...
curry, too much.
Cranberry.
Oh, how else are you going to get it out?
Next question. Keep going.
Moving on. Like,
this is...
Let's not get too deeply into, you know, the sort of structure of the uterus, but it does obviously it's got a lot of muscle fibers running along it in lots of different directions,
yep.
And it can expand. So this you know the wall is muscular, it expands and gets thinner obviously because it's expanding during pregnancy as a child develops in the womb, and obviously you know a kid grows in there. You pop the kid out in birth, or you get it snipped out, sliced out, and afterwards it returns to roughly its normal size after about 6 to 8 weeks, but apparently it's about 1 centimeter wider in all directions than before giving birth, like than sort of the pre-childbirth
size.
But I, as far as I'm aware, it's not like it's gonna, as you have more and more kids, it's going to increase by a centimeter every single time.
Just the first time
yeah
okay
yeah so slightly larger avocado.
Mm.
You know,
you get those.
Yeah, you got the you got the sort of normal jumbo, yeah. The normal size avocado, and you get the big one.
They charge more for those.
Yeah, they do charge more for those.
So thank God still you've got somewhere to store them.
They'll still fit in your uterus.
Only if you've had a baby. I'm going to have a baby well, specifically
that's a fine
so that
price
I can
to
store
pay
larger,
for a larger avocado.
It would stretch. It's fine.
Well, I suppose you don't even need to have a baby. You could just have an avocado. So, who are uterus transplants for?
Anyone who wants one. Whose uterus doesn't work?
Yeah.
And people who don't have uteruses but want one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who might not have a uterus?
Trans women.
And?
Cisgender men.
Intersex.
Cis
people.
Women who were born without uteruses?
Yes.
Intersexes.
And? Yes. Good job.
And what?
Wow.
Intersexes.
Intersex people. Oh, yeah.
Intersex people.
So, this is interesting.
Could I choose to have one? I'm not asking that as a joke. If I genuinely just wanted one. Like,
honestly,
because there are examples of like biological men. There's like there is an example of a biological man getting pregnant. A biological male man getting pregnant, I think, as in deciding to get pregnant.
No, that was a trans man. They just revolutionized it in the media.
Really?
Yeah, so literally I remember being a kid and everyone was just like, a pregnant man. I was like, how does that work? And it's literally just a trans man.
Yeah.
Like it was just a clickbaity title, wasn't it?
Oh, so they were correctly gendering him.
Yeah. Yes, but not
but
good
reasons.
Only
so they could, like... the world's first pregnant man.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Corey, who are womb transplants for?
Well, anyone that needs them. No, they can go to a number of people. We've spoken about this already a little bit. So what I do want to talk about is this paper that I saw that was talking about XY women, which obviously is interesting because XY women doesn't just encapsulate trans women. There's also intersex women that can be included in that as well, specifically women with complete androgen insensitivity syndrome, which essentially just means that their body, to some varying degrees, so it could be complete or it could be sort of partial androgen insensitivity syndrome. Basically what it means is that their body doesn't interact really with the male sex hormones like testosterone, right? It just kind of ignores them. So even if you have XY chromosomes and you know, normally that sort of baby, right, that sort of fetus would then embryo, zygote, whatever, would undergo sort of male development. You end up having, with complete androgen insensitivity syndrome, undergoing what is essentially female development externally. So you've got external female, external reproductive organs.
Okay, and can I just check? So if you have androgen insensitivity syndrome,
mm-hmm.
Are your female sex hormones that are present lower than the levels of somebody with XX chromosomes? And do the female external genitalia develop in the presence of female sex hormones, or do they develop in the lack of male sex hormones?
I don't remember specifically the process of differentiation there. But I think off the top of my head, and take this with a grain of salt, off the top of my head, I think that it's more a case of male sex hormones will trigger one path, and the absence of those means the other path will be essentially the default that will be followed.
Yeah, because that's like the thing, isn't it? The idea that people say is like everyone starts developing as a female in the womb. And it's kind of true and kind of not true.
You start in an undifferentiated state that is neither male nor female. But personally, if anyone was to look at it, they would probably think, "Oh, this is more female than male."
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah.
I was terrified that when I started testosterone, it just wouldn't work.
That'd be really funny.
I was like, "Well, if I had androgen insensitivity, just pump my body full of it," and it was like, "No, thank you."
There'd be nothing that you could do if you had that.
If you had a womb, you'd probably realize, you know, you probably wouldn't have androgen intensity syndrome.
Oh, no, it wasn't a genuine, like, okay. I wasn't like, oh, there's... there's.
Why not?
It's because it's external characteristics.
But can an XX AFAB person also have androgen insensitivity syndrome? As in, like, their body, because like everyone has a certain level of testosterone, most people have a certain level of testosterone.
Maybe, probably. So, I mean, like, one would assume, yeah.
Yeah, because like your underarm hair growth, is that triggered by testosterone regardless of your birth sex?
I've not looked very closely into all of this
I'm
stuff.
I'm asking
for
incredibly
this
specific
questions. You're asking me very specific questions about an episode that I'm not...
You could technically be born, I imagine you could be born female and have an androgen insensitivity syndrome that just never gets detected because you don't ever come into contact with a large amount of testosterone and don't desire to have any testosterone-based growth.
Yeah, I mean, probably. Yeah.
That's what I was worried about.
That's what you're worried about?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, makes thank sense. Goodness you didn't have it.
Yes.
You had valid worries.
We'll do another episode on androgen insensitivity syndrome, and we can answer all of your specific questions.
Great.
About that.
Then. I'm going to come up with a list of questions.
Please send that to me before I research the episode.
It's going to be a test for you. You always put the quick fire quiz on us. The quick fire quiz is coming.
Things questions. That he's covered during hold the hold episode. Yeah, no, he teaches
I'm
you
how
thing.
Well researched he is.
The quick fire quiz. A lot of the time, I very heavily stress the thing I'm going to be asking the question on.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, it's very telegraphed.
I know. But
you can't just be I'm going to research a topic and then ask you questions and not tell you remotely what those questions are.
Yeah. It's just an exam, isn't it?
But no. We don't get prior research.
No.
When is the last exam you took, Luke?
What?
When did you last take an exam?
Probably recently.
Yeah, fairly recently.
You were doing uni.
Yeah.
They ask you any questions that they didn't cover?
Yes. No, not that they didn't cover, but they asked me questions that I didn't know what the question was going to be.
You're told the syllabus, and then you get to research.
Corey is the teacher, teaches you everything, and then asks you questions from the things he's taught.
I do not need you to explain. I am aware that I'm being pedantic.
It's not pedantic, it just doesn't make sense.
All I'm saying is, if Corey was well-researched on the entire field of androgen insensitivity syndrome, he wouldn't need to worry about my questions.
You're right.
He might know everything.
Impossible.
Over the next week, what I will do is become an expert in androgen insensitivity syndrome. I will trump everyone working on this in the entire world.
All I'm asking.
You ask for so little.
I know.
Such a lovely person.
Maybe I'll ask for more in the future.
Maybe you should. So we can go over the exact specific history of uterus transplants another day. Because it's not super long, but it's quite specific. And there was another story that I came across whilst I was looking at all of this that kind of interested me, which everyone watching will probably already know given the title of this episode. But who has heard of someone called Lily Elba?
No.
No.
Who has heard of an actor called Eddie Redmayne?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, the Danish girl.
Like that man.
The Danish girl.
Oh.
Yeah.
Is Lily Elba Danish?
Yes.
Okay.
And she is.
Oh, she died.
Everyone dies.
Yeah, but she died during sex reassignment surgery.
Well,
spoilers.
If we are going to be very fair, she was born in 1882, so she'd probably be dead anyway right by now.
Yes.
Right. Mm. So let's not get too sad about.
That's not the big sad part,
big
is it?
Picture.
So, what do you guys know about Lily Elba?
Trans
she's
woman.
Danish and she's a trans woman.
She had a wife who loved her very much, mm-hmm. and they used to go to parties and she would dress up as a woman and, you know, before she came out as trans. And then she went to have sex reassignment surgery and she had a really happy life and she's so ready to wake up from it, and then she just died during surgery.
And she was played by Eddie Redmayne.
Yes. It's a very handsome
for some reason.
Man.
I genuinely feel quite bad for her because let me read you verbatim the first paragraph of her biography.com.
Maybe don't.
Well, I'm going to say verbatim. I'm going to cut some stuff out.
It's just the first sentence is literally just dead naming her. Right,
okay. Lily Elba was born dead name in Denmark in 1882 and moved to Copenhagen to study art at the Royal Danish Academy of Fine Arts as a teenager. After marrying Gerda Gottlieb, Elba discovered her true gender identity and began living as a woman.
Gerda.
That's like a frog.
I like the we're being annoying now and not them.
After undergoing 4 risky surgical procedures to transform her body from male to female, Elba died from post-operative complications in Dresden, Germany, just shy of her 49th birthday. The story of her life was made into 2 books, Man into Woman, and the international bestseller, The Danish Girl, as well as the 2015 film of the same name starring Eddie Redmayne. And then the whole article on biography.com goes on to refer to her by her dead name up until the point that she transitions, and also uses
what?
Her. Yeah, it's really weird. It's honestly, it's so strange to see that, because I usually with biography.com, it's usually pretty solid, you know.
Yeah.
Like this, I like getting little tidbits from there when I'm looking at not ancient scientists, but you know, scientists. And this was just very shocking to read it to read like this switch in
being,
the...
Being trans only becomes confusing when cis people start switching up the names and pronouns halfway through.
Yeah.
I was watching a Steven Crowder video the other day, and he did this thing that I love when they do, which is when they say the correct name and then correct themselves so they can say the wrong name.
Have you seen Ben Shapiro on Joe Rogan do that?
Well, so they do that with misgendering as well. Like, he'll go like Blair White, be like, she, oh, sorry.
He. Oh, sorry. I mean, he.
It's like, she over there with a big pair of titties. And you called her she, and then we're like, oh, shit, sorry.
I genuinely do think it's funny, though, because honestly, it just serves to show that the only thing that is confusing for you is that you know that you're doing something that is unnatural and difficult.
You have to actively be wrong.
Yeah, you've got to actively remind yourself. It's like.
So your brain is telling you what the correct thing is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're automatically go for the correct thing.
Yeah, you're picking up all the cues.
Yeah, you get it right.
You get it right.
And you're like, oh, God, and you're no. Like,
oh, wait, no, damn, that doesn't... I don't agree with that. No.
They got to me.
And that is the trans agenda.
was that from the Ben Shapiro video where he tried to say that pronouns were biological?
Yeah, he had a debate with Blair White where Blair White, like, schooled him, being like, no, pronouns are for social utility. Like,
yeah.
If you meet me for dinner,
yeah,
you're going to say, well, the girl, her over there, Blair, yeah, like, I'm meeting her. You wouldn't say him because that would just confuse, like, the waiter.
You guys are being very silly. You forget that Ben Shapiro that Ben Shapiro brings his whole lab kit and also, you know, some very special equipment to test every single person's sex whenever he sees them. Mm. Which is why getting on a crowded tube with Ben Shapiro is actually the most annoying thing. Because he just doesn't let the doors close until he's checked every single person in there for their genitals.
So not only did Blair White say a pretty correct thing, but then Ben Shapiro, like, agrees with her.
Yeah.
And then, but then, like, just goes on to say, but it's a biological lie. So it doesn't matter. And then Blair just, like, backs down.
These are lots of surprising things. One, I'm so surprised that Blair White actually...
Well, it was two surprising defended things trans followed up people. By two very expected things.
Yeah. Well, one, that Blair White defended trans people, and two, that Blair White schooled Ben Shapiro in any conversation. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Moving on, though. Back to Lily Elba. So, you know, she was an artist, and she was quite good at it and all that sort of stuff. And interestingly, so she... This is the story that I've read. So this probably deviates from the Danish Girl film because it's not super faithful to real life. But what I read was that she stood in for a female sort of model for her wife's paintings, and then that was the point where she realized, like,
oh
I see.
This is me.
And her wife was very supportive, and there were a couple other people that were supportive. So they moved to Paris at some point. And Paris at that point was a very, I guess, progressive place at that point, I think in the 20s. So it says here that she basically found out that you could get a sex reassignment surgery in the 20s. And so she went to speak to this doctor, this German doctor. Do you know what his name was?
Hans.
Hans?
No.
Hans.
You can't. When I say no, why do you keep saying Hans?
Hans.
It's not going to be Hans the more you say it.
Hansel?
No.
Hansel?
It was Magnus, Dr. Magnus Hirschfeld.
Magnus is pretty German.
Yeah, Magnus is a very German name. Very German name. Yeah. So Dr. Magnus Hirschfeld founded the German Institute for Sexual Science in Berlin in 1990.
Sexual silence.
Silence.
I'm gonna be really silent. Sorry.
So glad I don't have headphones on.
So he founded the German Institute for Sexual Science. Berlin in 1919, and apparently came up with the term transsexualism in 1923.
Oh my God, he did that.
Yeah, he did Yeah, no, good for him.
That's cool.
So
it's like 100 years old now.
Yeah. Transgenderism transsexualism is 100 years old. Transgenderism is very new, very, very
much younger.
New.
Yeah.
And he was performing sex reassignment surgeries at this time. Not the first one. People say, oh, yes, Lily Elba, the Danish girl, was the first person to ever get. She wasn't. There was someone before her. But we'll talk about her.
Did you have any information on, like, how he did them? Because I feel like they wouldn't be similar to.
There were lots of different operations that you would go through. Essentially, the first, I think the first one was essentially a surgical castration.
So, yeah, I assume they wouldn't be like doing anything internally. They just like chop it off.
Well, no, they would chop it off first, and then they would kind of construct like a sort of vagina, like in
outer shape.
Subsequent operations.
Oh, so not with like the genitals that they had like they do now, because they just turn it inside out now.
Yeah, so I don't actually know. I fully do not know the specifics of this. What it basically says here is, and I tried to look this up actually. It's difficult to find decent sources on what exactly
from like, 1920. Yeah,
probably. Well, no, genuinely, it's difficult to find decent sources from 1920 of what specifically happens in the surgery, because it's not like I can just pop to the NHS website and it says, "Hey, do you want to get this surgery? Here's exactly what happens."
1920
like,
style,
like, awesome. Yeah, I can't exactly just walk to a surgeon and be like, "Hello, sir, can you please give me a 1920s style vagina? I'll pay very good money for it." Like, no, it just doesn't work that way.
Have you tried?
You know, I haven't tried that look, okay. But that's probably because if I was going to get a vagina, I'd want a brand spanking new one. 2020s, please.
Not 100 years old.
No.
Quite dusty.
No, not
dusty.
There's one full off the shelf. This one's 100 years old. Do you want to
blow into it and it echoes?
I do not have the flexibility. I wouldn't have the flexibility to blow into it. That's the issue. Otherwise, you know.
I wasn't insinuating that you blow into your own vagina.
Someone blows into it for you.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a bit.
You know when you go, oh, like this.
I am not a Nintendo cartridge, Luke. Okay, I don't want to be treated like.
Ah. What's going on?
Audio listeners, that's the sound of a vagina being blown into.
This episode, man.
This is what I mean. You don't do anything, but it's just less.
This is not my fault.
No, I know. It's not your. But it happens when you're here. I don't.
Put the vagina back on the shelf, please.
It's 100 years old.
Do you think vaginas appreciate in value or not?
What?
A 100-year-old vagina, would that be more expensive or less expensive than...
Would you rather have sex with somebody that
I'm not
be
having
your nan's
sex
age?
With these vaginas.
What is the value?
I'm collecting them.
Why are you
Jeff has his vaginas on shelf.
What kind of question is this? Who it came from.
Why would it depend who it came from?
No, it would depend who's purchasing it.
I suppose.
Who is purchasing
vagina
vaginas?
I don't know. I'm just trying to logic out his question.
No.
It doesn't make any sense.
Don't.
Do you mean for somebody who wishes to get a vagina, would the...
That's not how it works, because they just use their own genitals.
No, I know.
It's just a question that, like, no, yeah. It's just not a question
not,
that we
not,
should acknowledge.
They
just don't acknowledge
it. They put it on.
It's like when he says jokes that are
like
mean, you're not supposed
pack.
To laugh. Like an expansion pack.
An expansion pack.
Or is that what you'd call it when you get the opposite one? It's an expansion pack. I mean, that's a great name for it.
You've already got a dick, you just get another dick put on.
No, I meant if you're being a trans man and you get bottom surgery, you want an expansion pack.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what it says here is that there were... So there were four operations that she went through initially. The first four were in 1930.
Four.
Yeah, I know, right?
And were those all bottom surgery, or were they?
Are these? So these were.
Have top
so
surgery?
These. This is. These are the. These are bottom surgeries that we're talking about. Yeah.
Right.
Four bottom surgeries.
Well, for phalloplasty nowadays, it's done in three stages.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Wow. Yeah.
But to be fair, the three stages for that are. I mean, most of it is just waiting for stuff to heal so you can reconstruct it some more.
Wait, fallow is?
Fallow is,
I knew Metordia was.
Yeah, no, fallow, they... It's probably not. Fallow, they... First stage is like... Well, it depends where you go, really.
Yeah.
I think some places do it in two stages, but usually it's three. Like, the first stage is the arm graft. Second stage is, like, reconnecting all that. And third stage is more,
shape.
Like, shape, yeah.
Mm. Interesting.
Do you want to explain the difference between fallow and metoidioplasty?
Isn't fallow taken from like your arm or something? You need like a skin graft, where metoidio uses what's already there.
Yeah.
I feel like Jamp is not the person that should be explaining.
No, that's what
I didn't want to turn to you.
That is my knowledge. That is my knowledge.
So phalloplasty is a type of bottom surgery.
If you want
surgery.
To know more, Google it.
Yeah,
right?
It's like phalloplasty is a bottom surgery where you use like a skin graft to construct a phallus.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas metoidioplasty. You use the genitals that you already have and kind of like enhance them without without the use of a skin graft. So usually they'd like a lot of the time. It depends. There's so many different types of metoidioplasty.
Expansion pack.
Yeah.
But usually what they do is they'd reconstruct it so that your urethra is going through your bits. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you'd have like a micro penis.
So clever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is clever.
It is clever, isn't it?
But you get to pee out of it.
It, well, it depends. Some people don't go for, like, usually, because, oh, I hate the word, ugh, the clitoris. So pretty much it's joint to your body. So one of the stages, they cut the piece of skin that attaches it to your body, so it's kind of like free flowing.
Whoa.
Yeah. And then some like people do go, yes, yeah, literally. And then some people
or
do
a penis,
go for,
I suppose.
Well, yeah. Sorry. Yeah. 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 But yeah, they thread the urethra through it. And ooh, you have to do what's called like urethral lengthening, which is usually where most of the complications come from, either of the surgeries. Because like if you think about it, like people assigned female at birth will have shorter urethras,
yeah,
and they have to make space for that.
Wow.
Have to make
yeah.
It a bit further.
Yeah.
That sounds hard.
And with phalloplasty, that's where like there's like a 50% complication rate, and it's usually to do with the urethral lengthening.
Oh dear.
Yeah.
Mm. Also, you get some balls on there at some point.
Yeah,
if
that's
you want
like
them.
Stage
if
three.
You, want them.
You can. Yeah, you can get implants.
And for fallow, wow. You can get very one good. That's like little switch or a little pump that.
Yeah, you can pump it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or you could get like a semi-rigid rod that's in there 24/7 and then when you want to...
Oh, just
you can get pump it up as a male as well.
Yeah.
It doesn't work anymore.
Yeah.
Pump
yeah.
it up.
For me, if I was getting it personally, myself, I'd be very worried if they didn't take out both testicles because I know I'd do the wrong one and just...
Oh.
Sorry, hang on.
Wait, is it a testicle?
Is the pump contained in a testicle?
I thought they had the pump in the scrotum.
You can get a pump in the scrotum. I think you can get it in your leg as well.
That is amazing. Oh. That, yeah. Your leg.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
I might be wrong.
They both originated from biological males mm-hmm. that had like defects with
yeah.
their penises,
yeah, yeah.
which is why it's like.
Yeah. Which is I didn't know
it was even in the body. I thought it was just like an external thing.
Yeah. Oh, no. In. Most of the time it's in like the testicle.
Wow.
I thought it was in the scrotum. Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
That is cool.
What are the testicle implants made out of?
It's like silicone. I'm pretty sure. It's like there. You can get expanding ones as well. So like they use the skin that's already there, as you can imagine, and the lippy bits.
Yeah, yeah, because that's where it comes from.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Your AMAB as well.
Yes, it's the same skin, but you can get expanding testicles. So if the skin isn't that big, you can put them in, and they can like grow while they're in your body, so they stretch.
Wow,
it's very interesting.
Brilliant. That's so cool. So they go in little and they slowly stretch the skin.
Yeah.
So good.
Yes.
Very cool.
Great work, doctors.
Good job. Little round of applause. So back to the 1930s. So Lily Elba had four operations. Like I said, the first one, it says a surgical castration procedure. And then the next three were throughout 1930 and 31 by Dr. Kurt Vornekros at the Dresden Municipal Women's Clinic. They basically removed the penis and they implanted ovarian tissue as well, which was interesting to me because when I was looking at this, it seemed like this isn't something that we do now.
Where is the ovarian tissue from?
It says human ovarian tissue.
So would it be like donated?
Oh, just from a woman, yeah. Just from
so a ovarian woman. Tissue meaning like ovaries?
Yeah, tissues from ovaries.
So that was like an ovary transplant.
Well, yeah, there was an ovary transplant involved in that, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, this is what's interesting to me, because obviously...
To what end?
The front end.
No.
No, for what reason?
No, what reason, if there is not
no, so a... this is what's interesting to me, because these were obviously sort of the first surgeries that were done. I mean, Lily Elba was, I think, the second, maybe, to get these kind of surgeries done. And again... It was difficult for me to find a lot of information on the Lily Elba stuff that was reliable because this is what happens with these stories. They're sort of sensationalized and then they become characters and it's difficult to find the actual facts, you know, and it seems to me like some of this was sort of experimental to an extent.
See what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would I mean, I guess like the theory go that like if you put some ovarian tissue in, then you might start having internal secretion of female sex hormones?
I mean, presumably, but I just don't.
Yeah.
I mean, especially at that point, it hasn't said, you know, whether she was on hormones, which I'm thinking she probably wouldn't have been in the 20s. Mm. What do you think?
I don't know, but I don't know if that's an accurate thing to say because I'm pretty sure there were a lot of experimental stuff done. I don't know around what year that was, but that was quite early.
Quite early?
Yeah.
Fair enough. I'm just saying that it hasn't said explicitly
in any
of this stuff.
Yeah.
And I just find it really difficult to find information on her specifically that is reliable, really. Mm. Like I said, because of the Danish girl, which took a lot of liberties with her story, it's just it's just a mess. It just becomes a whole mess trying to find out the facts on this.
In 1906, secretions from the ovaries were shown to produce estrus, cyclical sexual activity in non-human females. So it's pretty old.
Yeah, that was in animals, right?
Yeah, when was that?
Non-human females, sorry, yeah. It was not until 1929 that estrogen as a hormone was isolated.
Okay, so she could have been. She could have been.
Yeah.
But I don't know the likelihood.
But in 1897, ovarian extract was found to be effective for the treatment of menopausal hot flushing. So they might have had some kind of estrogen in people.
Maybe that'll probably be why they implanted that then. Right. Yeah, as I said, it's difficult to find this, like, because usually I want to go to science papers and things like that, and it's just it was difficult to find. I mean, do you know what? We could maybe go into this at some point.
It'd be an interesting episode to do the history of HRD and even just getting someone on that's had bottom surgery.
Well, that's the thing. I think it'd be really interesting to do. What's really difficult with these kinds of stories as well is that this began, honestly, as me looking at uterus transplants. Like I said, someone said this, and I was like, how far away are we actually from just a uterus transplant just being a thing? And then I kind of followed the story and ended up finding this story in it. And these can always be really interesting, but it's such a difficult line to walk because it can also be incredibly dehumanizing to talk about people and sort of things they go through in their lives from this sort of sterile scientific context, you know? And also when it comes to, as well, getting a guest on, you don't want to be like, hey, can you come on and talk about this one specific part of your life? Thank you very much.
Now and never come back.
Yeah, don't come back. The reason that you're on is because...
I'm sure someone would be very happy to talk about
it. No, I'm sure they would. No, the reason that you're on is because you just really like the idea of uterus transplants.
Yes, it's interesting.
Yeah.
Do hysterical pregnancies.
Yes, we'll do it.
Been asking this episode for 2 years.
Join our Patreon and vote.
Vote for hysterical pregnancies.
I think he was talking to you, Noah. Join our Patreon and vote.
Yes, but they can do it for free.
You can
on
all
my
can.
End.
No, they can't. Oh.
I don't have to pay any money.
They can do it
they
on behalf of
it.
You.
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
So we've gone over this. Lily Elba had quite a few surgeries, and apparently this is from Trans History. Apparently she might have been intersex and had some female internal organs anyway, but that's literally the only place that I've seen that. And even when it's brought up, it's some reports and people think, and she might have. I don't know if that's the case. In fact, I would assume that it's probably not. I've not heard anything specifically saying that.
Yeah.
And then there was another surgery afterwards, which they inserted a cannula. You know what that is?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Good.
Sorry, is that like a little thing they put in your veins?
It's like a tube. Yeah, a little tube.
When you have a drip in your arm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So because she'd had these surgeries, she was allowed to change her name and her sex legally and got a passport with her new name.
Whoa, all the way back then?
Yeah.
In which country?
That's pretty good.
So this was from the...
Denmark.
What's it called? The Danish... It would have been the Danish king that approved it, apparently.
Personally?
I don't know. It just says the Danish king approved it. Whether it was personally or not, I don't...
It's probably the same way that the queen has to...
Yeah, that's what I assume. I don't think the Danish king is sitting there, you know, being like, okay, no, not
Lily.
To you.
Yes, Lily's a good girl. I like her very much.
But look at this picture of Lily here. It's very pretty. There you go.
Lovely girl. Right.
You look like a very loyal subject. So she was allowed to change her name and... get a new passport. She was legally recognized as a woman, and the King of Denmark nullified her marriage in 1930. So this...
Oh, that's not so progressive. Or did she ask for that?
Well, she's married. It was the 30s, and she was married to a woman.
Yeah, well, I just mean, if you're letting people change their name and sex, and you're not letting them be married, that's a bit rude.
I think this is... Of all homophobia, I think this is... This is some good gender-affirming homophobia.
Okay, so actually it would have been, if you weren't allowing AFAB, like women, to get married to each other, then to not force them to get divorced would be transphobic.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
Wow.
We'll treat you like all the women and not allow you to marry any other women. Right. Wow, that's a really interesting take, Corey.
That is true.
I like that.
It's a double-edged sword, you know. Apparently she said that it was like being born again. It was an affirmation.
But the divorce.
What? No.
I'm sure many women feel like that.
Well, no, they were still good friends though, Lily and Gerda, it was Lily that found someone else, a new partner, and she wanted another surgery essentially that would allow her to have a basically functional vagina so that she could have sex with her new husband, and so she was planning this last surgery that involved the uterus transplant. So she was going to go through this. She got that last surgery and then she died not too long after from heart paralysis in 1931, just before her 49th birthday. So then we've got to the possibilities of uterine transplants in transgender patients. And this is just a paper of itself published in 2017, which I thought was really interesting. It brings up the Danish girl actually as well in it, which is what put me on to Lily Elba's story, and in this it says the only historical reference for attempted uterine transplantation in literature was reported in Germany in 1931, which was Lily Elba. So that was the only time we've tried to transplant a uterus into a transgender woman
since in 2021 they've still not tried that.
Well, yeah, I think it's because, well, one, imagine that story came out. That is a very difficult story to deal with. I think there are likely some people that are hesitant to do that.
Oh, yeah, I just think there's probably going to be more of a demand of it now that there's, like, science has, like, progressed a bit. I just feel like that's very interesting.
Absolutely, absolutely. I just think that there's kind of... The issue now is that I think we know more, which is holding us off, right? So we know more about the hormone balances and the conditions that need to be had. And there's also issues of how the uterus is implanted. Mm-hmm. So you've obviously got to be on specific hormones to have the right you've got to have the right hormone balance. And this is whether you're a cis woman or a trans woman mm-hmm. getting a uterus transplant. You need to have your hormones controlled in the right way so that it can, your body can accept the uterus. You also need to have there's these ligaments that are inside your body that hold the uterus in place, and those are used in cis women, but those aren't present in trans women. So you need to find another way of basically hooking the uterus in there, mm-hmm. right? And you've also got to be on immunosuppressive drugs. You've also got to there might be differences with the hormone balances that you need to ensure for trans women when compared to cis women for these surgeries. So we don't have a solid technique for doing this for trans women. We've actually, I think, from what I've seen in terms of cis women, still an experimental surgery, definitely. I mean, again, as I've said, there's a handful. You probably count on both hands the number of times we've done this successfully. Mm-hmm. You can count on one hand the number of times we've done it successfully. And there's been full function and it hasn't there hasn't been decreased function afterwards or, you know, whatever like that. There's been, I think, maybe one, off the top of my head, I think one birth from a uterus transplant so far. It's something that is definitely possible, but it's not something that is as commonplace as, say, a kidney transplant.
But there's been one birth from a uterus transplant, but one and a trans woman. Okay.
No. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So these are with cis women. So it's been multiple. There's been multiple transplants, uterus transplants.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. But I was just thinking, what is the, like, I know what the purpose of a uterus transplant is, but like, how would it work in terms of one woman has a dodgy uterus and then gets somebody else's uterus that has been transplanted?
It was
into
a mother
her.
To daughter one.
Sure. Yeah. But what? How would what's the egg situation like? Work?
Oh, sorry, that is a good question. It's IVF.
Yeah.
So
you wouldn't produce any eggs.
No.
So the uterus transplant is purely so that you can house a child.
So you can carry you can carry a child.
And it serves that is a purpose.
That's generally the purpose. Sorry. Okay. That also, makes sense. I think so the uterus would then the uterus would then go through the normal shedding. I'm pretty sure there's
shedding what though?
Shedding its lining.
Yeah, but surely that happens when the egg.
So no, I'm saying it happens due to the hormone cycle. Like I've from what I've read, and there's it's talking about a couple times I think of having periods after that, And obviously as well,
that's so unfair.
They've been pregnant.
That's so unfair. Go through all the effort of getting a uterus transplant, you still get periods.
Well, you probably want them if you're getting the uterus transplant. True.
I know, but
you want a refund if you didn't.
Nobody. Well, yeah. Just, no. Nobody is like having a period. And it's like, oh, I'm enjoying this. Woo.
No, I mean, honestly, what I would generally recommend this. That I wouldn't usually say go to Wikipedia, but Wikipedia has actually got like a really it's got a concise list, and obviously it's got all the sources there as well. But the Wikipedia has a concise list of basically all of the sort of uterus transplants that have happened, and that's the issue. Like, not the issue. That's the thing that is, I guess, really important for you guys to know is that you can fit all of this on maybe a couple pages, what, a 3-page Wikipedia page. There's not been much of this. I mean, it's not even happened in that many countries. It's literally here: Germany, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Sweden, U.S., India, all of that. I mean, there's issues with ethics of like sort of, oh, where are we getting the uteruses from? Obviously, I think
dead people.
I think there's been one case of taking it from a.
What? So somebody else has just given somebody their uterus?
Well, in one case, it was a mother to daughter transplant.
I don't need this anymore. You can have it.
I have no use.
God.
I already made you. Oh my gosh. So then your child would be growing in the same womb
that
as
you grew in. Oh my God. Wow. It's like, you know, taking over your parents' hives and letting your kid use your childhood bedroom, right?
Like an heirloom.
My mother gave me this uterus and I will give it to you. I mean, actually, there's been a kidney that's been in, I think, three people.
Yeah, wow.
The original person and the second person who it didn't work for, and so they put it into another person, I think.
Oh, do you know, probably not, but do you know off the top of your head whether every person carries the necessary genetic code to build a uterus technically?
Technically, everyone has...
It's not on... on. A certain.
Technically, everyone has at least one X chromosome, so...
Yeah.
Yes.
So you could... Because part of the problem is all the immunosuppressants. If you can get to the point where we can grow an organ, you could have a uterus that is genuinely your genetic code grown for you and then implanted in you, and you wouldn't need immunosuppressants, or you're not as many at least.
Well, yeah, but then the issue with that is, I mean, yeah, you're right. You are right. And this is something I want to talk about. You're absolutely right. What is difficult is there's so many like things to overcome. So you've said, let's grow the organ. Great. How do we get it? Oh my God. It's so frustrating thinking about all of the different issues that you come up against. How do you get the organ in and attached and staying where it should be? So let's say we're talking about a cis woman. Like, obviously there's those ligaments you can attach it to.
Shove it up your fanny.
But well, yes. Okay. Yes. It's not quite that simple, but yes.
The cervix is very small.
It stretches.
Yeah. It stretches, but it would be very, it's like shoving a fist through.
No, you can shove a baby out of it. So, you know, well, shove an avocado size.
Yeah, if you can induce if you're
becoming, yeah, but if you're becoming maybe pregnant, your body is 9 months to prepare for that. And is.
Yeah, it's only an avocado. That must take like, what, a month? Easy. Start off with
I'll shove an avocado through your penis hole.
Well, but his penis hole doesn't
yeah, mine, sorry, it doesn't
expand. Yeah.
You can get a golf ball up there, but that's about it.
A golf ball?
There's people that do that for fun.
So the issues that you've got are, you know, attaching it and sort of implanting it. But also think about the blood vessels. You need to have blood vessels carrying sort of blood to it.
Mm. Yeah, sure.
Nerves, like all of the different sort of sensory elements of it. It's not quite as easy as just getting one, shoving it up and hoping for the best, you know? I mean, no, it's harder than that. It's definitely harder than that. So growing one, like, that'd be so cool. But there's so many problems that we have to, like, because I keep on thinking about this. Like, people talk about growing dicks for trans guys. And what people don't...
Not enough people talk about growing dicks for trans guys.
More people should be talking about it, really.
Exactly.
They should.
Well, look, if you want that to happen, just find a big group of cis guys and engineer a way for them to lose their penises. And within about a month, you'll probably have a brand new method of surgery.
No, I thought you were going to say, penises. Find a group of cis guys with small penises and tell them that we can make it bigger.
Do that as well.
You think they're going to trust that email you send them?
Well, I'm not going to trust that email.
What I'm saying is...
Outlook.com, sure,
I'm saying
they'll trust that.
My point here is that basically every trans surgery, and I tried to find this out, but I think off the top of my head, pretty much every trans surgery was developed for cis people.
I don't think male to female was.
The reconstruction. Well, it come from it mostly. Yeah.
Yeah.
The male to female probably. The male to female not probably not.
No. Well, phalloplasty did. Metoidioplasty, I don't think so much.
The principles behind it. Yeah.
Oh, so for like phalloplasty and double mastectomies, obviously double mastectomies probably originated from like cancer treatment, and phalloplasty originated from like cis men.
Gynecomastia.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, but I feel like they were developing double mastectomies for cancer before they were getting rid of excess.
Yeah, but a top surgery is more than a double mastectomy. It's a reconstruction of a male appearing chest. I checked this out on the NHS website as well.
No, I know it's reconstruction.
But yeah. that was constructed for people with cancer as opposed to for cis people. Although most of the people.
Yeah, but my point is that so where you've got kind of if you're like male and you grow breast tissue and you don't want it, they will remove it and reconstruct.
I thought you meant if you had like breast cancer and you have to have your breast removed.
No.
I don't think they do reconstruction with gynecomastia.
Yeah,
do they?
Yep.
Do they not just grab it out?
No, they take it out and they reconstruction as in they will replace the nipples where the nipples look like they should go. I checked it out on the NHS. Honestly, it's really difficult to get it on the NHS. And it costs about the same as it costs the same as top surgery.
Because it's
just top surgery. Wow. That's what I was checking out. All was maybe a bit too far.
It was very far.
No, it was very far. There were some that I forgot about, but the principle
like half of them.
Yeah, half of them. I don't think about all of them all the time. It's not usually on my mind. But a lot of the surgeries that you see for trans people were developed initially sort of for cis people.
And your solution
for intersex people
is to mutilate a bunch of cis people so that the technology is invented.
You know, when you say the things that I say. Like that,
yeah. Well,
they sound awful.
That is what you said.
So I think you should stop saying the things I say back to me that way.
Okay.
Yeah. No, but if you did, you
never get a therapist.
No, sorry, I'm not paying you like £80 an hour just to repeat the things I say back to me, but making them worse. That's not helpful.
I'm not actually making them worse, Corey. I'm just describing them back to you. You're making them worse.
I think you have a bias, man. I don't agree with you. Mm. No, but I think it is interesting. It is interesting that.
Terrible to therapize. My God.
I'd be such a pain, right?
You would.
Be a little minx.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Because you're smart, but you also know it.
Like, you'd be fun to therapize.
I'm sure I wouldn't.
No, you'd be difficult.
My therapist.
But how do I know anything's real, sir?
Well, you'd spend the first 40 minutes of a 45-minute session just getting into the fact that, yes, we're both real and sitting here. Mm. Now can we talk
now
about your issue?
Now that we've established that.
Now that we've established
that's all
that,
the time we
let's
have
quickly
for today.
Go through 5 minutes of the issues that you've had this week.
You have to do it every week. Just
to... And I'd be like, week? Week? Time's not
time
real.
Time is not reasonable.
You show up like 40 minutes late. Time's not real, man. Yeah, but no, I think it is interesting that a lot of surgeries for trans people were initially developed not for trans people. It's kind of like it's not similar to this, but it brings up to my mind the in a similar way to how
trickle down economics.
Well, no, do you know how in order to get funding to make
trickle down economics is the idea that if you make rich people richer, then the money will trickle down and poor people will become richer.
Okay.
So. Corey's saying that the theory goes if you invent surgeries for cis people, eventually they
will
be used to improve the lives of trans people. They'll get the sip on the drips that fall from the table.
It's similar in it's at least tangentially related to, do you know how all those products that you see that look, you see them on sort of telemarketing shows, and you're like, oh man, telemarketing? On the telesales shows, you know, teleshopping, that's it. And you're like, oh man. This item, who is so lazy that they need to have an egg chopper appliance or an appliance that does this one specific task?
Disabled
and
people.
Then you realize that it's for disabled people.
It's, disabled people.
It's for disabled people. And you're like, oh, wait, no, that makes so much more
sense. There's so many TikTok accounts dedicated to looking at these products going, look how useless this is. And then all the comments are just like, some people have to use this to be able to do
I
this
can't
very basic
move my
thing.
Fingers. Yeah, like this is all I can have.
But I don't think it's those people's fault, because ultimately, when have you ever seen any of those things be marketed towards disabled people?
No, yeah, yeah.
You don't,
it's true.
Because they're not marketed towards disabled people. You don't see disabled people in any of the ads for them. Like this is like, you know, infomercials, the whole joke about
marketed
like,
towards general convenience.
Like, it's literally they show someone who is entirely able-bodied having to like really overact, pretending to struggle to do the shoehorn, a task that you know they can do.
The shoehorn is one that always gets me. Like shoehorns are usually used by like people who are old and can't bend down as much, or people who are disabled who can't bend down as much. And I remember seeing on teleshopping a shoehorn being like, this is so stupid, just like pull your socks up.
I have an alternative narrative for you, which is that if you invent something that is both helpful for lazy people and helpful for people who are disabled and have a genuine need for that product, the people who are lazy subsidize part of the price so that it's slightly cheaper for the people who genuinely need
it. But this is exactly why I brought it up, because that's exactly what's happening here. That's exactly why they don't market it to disabled people, though really they kind of should to some extent.
Well, but you might in circles where most of the people are disabled. Like if there's a magazine for disabled people, it's probably not going to show a bunch of people who are able-bodied using the products. And you have to just imagine how you might use it in your life.
Honestly?
No,
I feel like they would.
No.
I feel like they would.
Not if they're specifically taking out an ad in a magazine targeted towards people who exclusively have different needs.
Yeah, fair.
Like, come on, have a little bit of faith in people.
Man, I don't trust advertisers, you know. One blanket.
Use your imagination, disabled people.
Yeah, but no, I think genuinely that, which is really interesting, because those surgeries are now able to help a lot of trans people.
Yeah.
When initially, I don't think trans people were necessarily even thought about for some of them.
Like, you know? Top surgery is a cosmetic thing that also is now helpful for trans women.
Yeah.
Like breast implants.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, not top surgery.
I got inverse, so confused.
Inverse top surgery.
Yes. Just top surgery, but yeah.
Breast implants.
It is a type of top surgery.
Yeah,
it's just not normally referenced. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So that's kind of the story of, I mean, really the first uterus transplant, and kind of a little bit touching on them. And we kind of, we spoke a little bit about, you know, who uterus transplants are for and all of that. But this is kind of more of an introduction to the topic with a touch on Lily Elba and her story. Again, we didn't go too deeply into her because really the interesting part of... No.
I didn't say anything.
You made that face when I said deeply into her.
We didn't go too deeply into her.
Fucking hell. Okay.
She only had the external part done.
She hadn't had it done yet.
So that's kind of the story of the first uterus transplant for a trans woman and kind of where we are with that now. To summarize, we're kind of getting there for cis women, but for anyone that's sort of an XY woman, it's still a little bit away. But I genuinely think that within a century, it will be something that is not necessarily commonplace, but definitely like
doable,
accessible to an extent.
Yeah.
Absolutely doable. Yeah, fairly doable.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, we if you want to hear more about these sort of topics, like if you want to go specifically into the history of uterus transplants for everyone, for cis women, by all means, let us know and we'll do that. Or head over to our Patreon, patreon.com/SciGuy, sign up there. You can send in topics that you want us to do. If you become an executive producer, you can just tell us what to do. We have to do it.
Maybe one day we'll get to a point where this is such an easy surgery to do that if you don't want to have periods, you can have your uterus removed. And when you decide to have a child, you can have an uterus implanted.
That's great. I do love that.
Well,
that'd be pretty cool.
Pretty convenient. Like, well, yeah.
I like the idea of trans people swapping organs.
Like, me too. That's how I thought it worked.
Yeah.
Well, I just swap bodies.
I used brain piece by piece.
You know?
I remember being like 15 or something and like sat in the bath and being like, oh, but what if I can't find a nice willy from a trans woman? What if I have to get one that's like not that nice? It's like not a nice shape and it's a bit smaller than I want.
Yeah.
Those are the worries I had as a 15-year-old.
Mm, well, how does that relate to the worries you've got now?
So irrelevant. So irrelevant.
But I think it's interesting because the issues, I think, as far as I'm aware, for growing those kinds of organs, like you were mentioning, Luke, is it's the attaching them. More than anything, because they're so complex and people generally don't think of that. There's all of the different things that you've got to hook up, and that can just be really difficult, especially if, you know, the sort of receiving end isn't there on the person that you're grafting it onto, you know? So it's interesting, but it's kind of a difficult sort of it's a difficult problem to solve. But we know what the problem is, so it's only a matter of time before we solved it.
Yeah.
So I think in our lifetimes we could be seeing these surgeries. Think so. Cool. So why don't we move on? Maybe it's a little quick fire quiz.
Quick fire quiz.
Dun 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 dun. Uterus edition. Gone basic.
So we know the rules for the quick fire quiz, don't we? We know the rules, don't we?
We know the rules.
Well, you should
tell
us anyway, just in case.
I'll tell you the rules anyway.
Well, some of us have forgotten. Maybe.
Okay, someone's forgotten the rules. So I will ask one question. One question from the three of you. The first person to buzz in with the correct answer after I finish asking the question wins. What do they win, Jamp?
Nothing.
Validation.
Zilch.
This time,
internal. Is there a prize?
A free uterus.
It's a uterus. They win a uterus.
Just what I've always wanted.
Yay!
Your wish.
I think we've learned some things about you today. So, what are your buzzers, Noah? What's your buzzer?
Garda.
Luke, what's your buzzer?
Ooh.
Jamp, what's your buzzer?
Oh, good.
Jamp, please explain what your buzzer is.
It's the sound of a uterus.
Mine was the sound of me receiving my uterus as a prize.
Ooh.
Specifically, the uterus being placed inside Luke.
Ah.
Okay.
There you go.
So, my question for you is, when did the film The Danish Girl come out?
Oh.
Jamp, I think that was you.
Was that? Oh, 2015.
Ding, ding, ding. That is correct. Well done.
Congratulations.
That was a bad
win
question.
Win a uterus.
Why was it a bad question?
That was a bad question.
Because you don't know the answer.
A bad question.
Yes, but
it's
also...
It's also written right there, and I know you're reading.
I'm with you now. I always used to get really annoyed when Corey would ask a question that was nothing to do with the science.
Yeah, like, this is the science. I was like, this is a film.
What? Yeah, but whenever I did ask a question about the science, you wouldn't get it right.
That's fine. We learn again.
Okay. Well, we can do another one. Let's do another one. Asking a question a little bit more about the science. Okay,
go on.
Okay.
On average, roughly, how large is a uterus?
Oh!
Jeez, Noah.
6 to 8 centimeters.
Yeah, okay, good.
Well done.
Yeah, well done.
I would have said avocado.
I was looking for avocado, but you raised the bar here.
Well, no, for getting such an accurate answer, you win 2 uteruses.
Yay!
They cancel each other out.
Nope.
Oh.
You will now have 3.
Oh.
I hope you can fit them all in.
Don't even want one.
Get them all in.
What?
So that is it for us. I think we're probably going to have a little bit more of a chat on this topic later on. If you wanna tune in to an episode of Sci Guys After Dark, we'll probably be chatting about this at some point. Be dropping this month, actually. Luke, do you want to explain what Sci Guys After Dark is to our lovely watchers?
Our lovely watchers and listeners. Sci Guys After Dark is an extra show we do over on our Patreon. It is exclusive to Patreon at the moment. And basically, when the conversation stops, as Corey always pitches it, the conversation doesn't stop, which is basically that we will have, after some episodes where we feel we have lots more to say and we want to just discuss and hypothesize and that kind of thing, we'll keep the cameras rolling and we'll just chat and we'll leave the science at the door.
Woo!
To a certain extent. It's more just like a casual conversation where we can just throw ideas around and have a good time. And we've been having a really good time. We've got lots of really great feedback about it. So we really enjoy it. The Sci Guys After Dark. And also the lights are darker. So that's fun too.
You get to be in the dark. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's nice.
Got a blue lighting scheme for it as well.
Ooh.
Very nice.
Ooh.
Very different. But that's it from us today, I think. That's all. That's all we've got. We'd like to thank our very special guest, Mr. Noah Finns, for joining us.
That's okay.
Is there
anything you want all the Sci Guys watchers and listeners to check out, Noah?
His collection of uteruses.
I have a new EP out. It's called Stuff From My Brain. It is songs that are about stuff from my brain.
Mm.
You can get it on Spotify and Apple Music and all the other places where you get your music.
Okay, good job, good job.
It's like watching a father help his son order. You know, when you go to like a restaurant and it's like, all right, son, you're going to order. This is what you said.
I wrote down an order for him to get from a bar on his phone yesterday.
I don't order alcohol. I feel silly doing
Can I have vodka?
Check out Stuff From My Brain. The link will be in the description, along with a link to our Patreon. And before we go, we would like to thank all of our patrons. The very special thank you to executive producer Ashley Muller and Finn TZ. And also, thank you for watching. You can find the full references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Sunday, and why not leave us a nice wee comment? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys, or you can find and contact us at SciGuyPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and also at SciGuys on TikTok too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
SciGuysPod. And wait, no, do you want to do it?
SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
No. Oh. SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
You can follow me at NotCorey everywhere.
Follow me at Jamkin everywhere.
You can follow me at LukeCutforth everywhere.
You can follow me at NoFins everywhere, apart from Twitter, where it's NoFin Adams, and on TikTok, it's the NoFins.
Ooh, mouthful.
Yeah. Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.